What's it like as a father not being able to have contact with your daughter?
You may as well just take my heart out.
When that child is taken away from you, you go through the same emotion as if they have died.
Yeah.
You go through that grieving process.
What do you think is missing from the court system?
I had so many judges. Every judge would see it differently or make a different order. Different judges, different attitudes, different outcomes. You're fighting, and you know further forward than I was 5 years ago.
How do you think this has impacted on your mental health?
It impacted me in the biggest way I've ever had anything impact me. When I hear that fathers, they've committed suicide because of this. I've been to that point. I know what it feels like. How do I get out of this hole? How do I take this rope off my neck?
What brought you back from that? In today's episode, we're talking about one of the hardest realities within family law, when a parent is denied the chance to see their own child, even after the courts have said that they should. My guest today is Mart, a good friend, a father who has spent the past 5 years trying to rebuild a relationship with his daughter. Despite multiple court orders granting him contact, enforcement has failed, leaving him completely cut off and left to navigate a system that promises fairness but too often delivers heartbreak. Mart's story isn't about blame. It's about the system itself, a system that too often leaves parents powerless, children disconnected and families broken by process rather than protected by it. What you're about to hear is an honest, calm and important conversation about how a father's love can endure in the face of silence and why the family court system in England and Wales desperately needs change. Mart, thank you for being here on my podcast. I really appreciate you coming along. I'm going to just jump straight into it. What's it like as a father not being able to have contact with your daughter?
You may as well just take my heart out. It's an absolute... There's no words to describe the emotion and the feeling that you kind of go through. And it's like... And there's nothing you can do about it. You know, as a father, you kind of vow to protect your children and fight for your children and do whatever you can.
Yeah.
And it's when you're left with nothing else in the tank and... It's hard, very, very hard to kind of try and live on from it. And I mean, every day I wake up and I think of Isabella, what's she up to? What's she doing? You know, I speak to her every day now at the minute, but it's hard because that physical touch isn't there. It's, you know, since the day she was born, she's always been in my arms. And to have that taken away from you is an absolute killer.
How long were you in her life before you separated from her mom?
I was there, I think Isabella was two when the relationship broke down.
Yeah. Did you know right from the beginning it was going to be difficult to maintain contact with Isabella?
I was hoping that it wasn't. Yeah. And in all fairness, it wasn't that difficult. You know, we came to an agreement there. I got to speak to Isabella on the phone. Even though she was two, you know, I'd still talk to her.
Let her hear your
voice. Yeah, let her hear my voice, basically. And I think it was every other Sunday that I got to see her. We'd go to a play centre or something like that. And it was okay. You know, I kind of looked forward to them times, you know, even though they were 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
You always looked forward to that time. And you were always thinking, what can I do next time? You know, how do I make it better?
Yeah.
And then it all stopped.
So you decided to make your application to the family court. Mm-hmm. How old is Isabella now?
Isabella is 8. She turned 8 in August.
And how old was she when you made your application to the court?
Isabella would have been 3.
What was your expectations when you made that application?
I think everybody's got an expectation of court where they think, right, well, if I can't sort it out, you know, the courts will kind of sort it out for me. How wrong I was.
Just bring it back to basics for those that are listening and might not understand. What was the type of application that you made? What were you actually asking the court for?
I wanted the court to kind of make it, you know, an an order that I got to see my daughter.
You know, you weren't looking for custody?
No, I wasn't looking for custody whatsoever. Just that I got to be in her life.
Regularly.
You know, you hear a lot of people saying, you know, the law states that it's the child's right to have two parents, blah, 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 blah. But it's, you just want to be there and be a part of what's going on. Mm. You know, you want to be, you want to see the milestones. You want to, you know, kind of hear her speak, basically, you know, from toddler to as they grow older, you know, they come out with words. And it's funny, you know, the kids come out with, they pronounce things differently. Yeah. And, but yeah, you know, I always wanted to be a part of her life.
So you make the application. How long does it take before you get your first order allowing you contact, or did you get that order?
I think I made the application in the October, and the first court hearing was in the beginning of December.
Okay, so a couple of months later.
Yeah, it was a couple of months later.
And what happened at that hearing?
So we had a lovely judge. He made an interim order, first of all, whilst all these Section 7 reports and everything were getting gathered.
Yeah, we'll come on to that, yeah.
He kind of turned around and said, you know, you can see your daughter, but it has to be in a contact centre.
Okay,
fine. If that's what I've got to do, that's what I'll do.
Why was it in a contact centre?
So, I mean, there were, I think, 42 allegations made at the time. Okay. So, obviously, the court had to investigate them.
Absolutely.
So, I think the court deemed it, you know, safer that I seen Isabella in a contact centre, which was fine. It's a hoop that I got to jump through, and I'll jump through.
Yeah.
You know?
And at the same time, the judge asked CAFCAS to do a Section 7.
Yes.
What is that?
To me, it was like an interview of both parents on kind of wanting to know what you wanted out of the process, basically. Yeah. So, you know, you had a CAFCAS interview. Well, first of all, they ring you up, introduce themselves, and they give you a date to say, you know, oh, we'll speak on this date and we'll have a chat and I got questions. Fine, no problem.
Yeah.
You know, I'll agree, you know.
And then CAFCAS then feedback to the judge.
Yes.
And was their feedback good or bad in this instance?
I wouldn't say that it was good or bad.
Okay, impartial. Then.
It was impartial, don't get me wrong. But it was, I felt very biased.
Okay.
To one side.
Did they make a recommendation for supervised contact to continue, for it to be unsupervised?
So they agreed that the supervised contact should continue.
Okay.
As long as Isabella was engaging in the contact, which she was. Obviously, there were reports on every session.
Yeah.
So I spent almost 2 hours on the phone with my CAFCAS officer.
Okay.
During our interview then. And for the whole 2 hours, we argued.
Okay.
You know?
Anyway. So you didn't feel that you were being listened to, supported?
But she was coming and saying things, oh, well, mother's telling me this and mother's telling me that. And I'm like, well, I'm telling you my side, you know? And it was very stressful. I got off the phone and I smoked at the time. I must have gone through about 20 cigarettes in an hour, because I was so angry with the things that she was coming out with. Mm. And obviously the CAFCAS officer tells you at the end, oh, well, I'm going to make this recommendation. I'm going to make this recommendation. And you ask the question, why?
Yeah.
Why are you making that? And then they don't have to give you an answer.
No. That must be so frustrating, because this is your child. Yeah. You've gone to the court to ask for help. The court will always try to get that independent third-party view, which is what CAFCAS affords them. And now you haven't got any support from CAFCAS.
Nothing.
You're not being listened to.
Nope.
So CAFCAS report this back to the judge. What type of order does judge then decide to make? Because obviously judge has the power to set CAFCAS's recommendation to one side. Yeah. But in your case, what order does the family court give
you? So the judge agreed for a period of time that supervision was to be ordered. Mm. That I think it was a period of 6 months. and then a progression away from the contact centre into the community, but then supported by a family member. I just never got to that stage.
And when the court made that order, was it a final order, or was it like, go off and do this for 6 months and then come back and sort of report back how everyone's doing? Or was it just like, final, off you go?
No, I don't think it was a final order at that time. It was a kind of trial and error, kind of come back to us, you know, in a couple of months and we'll go for, you know, we'll review. And
at the time it was breached, had you even managed to get out of the contact centre or no?
No, we were still in the contact centre. But there were various complaints and things coming in, you know, and by the time, obviously, I decided that I wanted to enforce the order. And the judge agreed, you know, and issued a warning to kind of say, if this isn't being adhered to, penal notice will get added. You know.
So you now have an order that's been breached. You take it back to court to enforce it. And court supports your application.
Yes.
Okay, so the court's doing something supportive in that instance. And they're saying, yeah, we support that. But what do they do then? Just give you the order again?
They just give me the same order.
So we're back to supervised contact again.
So we're back to supervised contact. And supervised contact was always, you know, there was never a negative there. You know, obviously all the reports that came out were always, Dad was always engaging, Dad, you know, you know, it was all for Isabella. You know, Dad didn't pick up his phone. He never, you know, he just spent his time with Isabella, concentrating on Isabella and what she wanted to do. And obviously, I would always take food with me, you know, because we were there for nearly 2 hours at a time.
It's something to do.
So, you know, I don't, and it was like, even though I don't live with her, and right, or there might have just been a Tesco sandwich, but I was still feeding my daughter, you know. I was still sitting down at a table and kind of watching her eat and, you know, that kind of thing, you know. So it was a glimpse of normality for me. You know, it was that little bit of, you know, not family life, but spending time with my daughter, us both eating and
doing the normal things.
Yeah, getting to know what she liked, what she didn't like. You know, I bought her a wrap one day and she made me pick out the lettuce because she didn't like the lettuce. So it was them little things that 5 years on, I still remember, you know, it was small things, but still it means a lot kind of thing.
So kind of the second attempt at this now, do we get out of the contact centre this time?
Nope.
No. So it's breached again.
So it's breached again.
What do you do?
I then go back to court.
Another enforcement application.
Okay. But I think because I wasn't just stuck with one judge. Mm-hmm. I had so many judges. And every judge would make a different, or see it differently, or make a different order. Or, so, all right, we'll go with this and see if this works. But it was, you kind of hope that they're all on the same page.
Yeah.
But they're not. It's different judges, different attitudes, different outcomes.
Do you think had your case stayed with the primary judge, it would have been a very different outcome?
Yes, very
much. Do you
much,
think?
Very
okay.
much.
Okay.
Because,
in what way?
So he, I think, not judges see cases every day, you know, and it's not that they kind of take it personal or whatever, you know, it's their job, you know. I suppose they're there to help to resolve these issues kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, judges, so when you do go back to court and, you know, they see you and they think, oh, I remember, you know, Mr. Lewis, or, and they kind of remember what happened in the last hearing. But then when you get a different judge that doesn't know, even though it's in the records, you know, it's in the orders, you know, sometimes you think, have you read this damn order? You know? And then they just make a completely new one up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, we'll go with this then. But you are, there's nothing you can do to kind of say, you know, hang on, I want the other judge. Mm. You know, I liked him.
Yeah.
You know,
he seemed fairer.
He seemed fair.
Yeah.
But you can't do that. You've just got to go with what the court says. And so you kind of, you jump through hoops the first time and then you go back and then they say, yeah, we'll give you more hoops, but now we're going to light them on fire. You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, and you do it, you know, you jump through them. But then every time you go back, there's always another hoop that, you know, it gets smaller.
And you must feel then, you must get to a stage where you think, why weren't all the hoops presented to me at the last hearing?
Yeah.
Why each time when I go back is there more challenges and more hoops to jump through?
Mm-hmm.
So that lack of consistency, I think, is really damning.
Yeah.
Really damning, particularly to fathers' cases.
Yeah.
Obviously, we can't talk about what was discussed in court because that's very private.
Yeah.
But overall, you're now back with your second enforcement application.
Yeah.
Was that order back to the contact centre again?
Back to the contact centre again. So it's like every time that we kind of, I go back for the enforcement, it resets the 6 months.
Despite you having the contact centre giving glowing reports, despite breaches happening, that to one side, you've probably by now ticked the 6 month at the contact centre box, haven't you?
I think I was a year on. And I'm still getting told within 6 months, you need to come out of the contact centre.
But we've done the contact centre for a year, a broken year.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, if we add them all together, a year.
Yeah. But it just felt as if every time that we went back or the order was breached, it was a 6 month reset. I'd never done 6 months of contact.
Consistently.
There was always, we'd do 4-5 sessions. And then it would be a break.
Then it would be a break.
And then it'd be back to court. Or, you know, at the point, I was emailing her solicitor myself and saying, can you explain what's going on?
Yeah.
You know? And
5 or 6 sessions would go by. You'd then make your application to enforce. How long does that take to process the actual enforcement application?
It depends really on the urgency of it. You know, if there's something really bad that's happened, I suppose the court will hear it pretty quickly.
But in your experience, how long were you waiting from when you filed your C-79, the enforcement?
I don't think it was ever longer than 4 weeks.
Okay.
You know, I'd put the application in, you know, and if there was a slot available for a morning hearing or, you know, an hour or 2 hearing, you'd be heard then.
Yeah.
You know, so it was not as quick as, you know, people want it. You know, I want it tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's my daughter. It's this time that I'm wasting.
Yeah.
You know, but it was always within 4 to 5 weeks that I was, you know, always back in.
And then you'd have to organise the contact centre again.
Again.
So the gaps between contact being breached and starting it again could be 2-3 months.
2-3 months.
Yeah.
Could be 2-3 months.
So that in itself is really damaging on your daughter
because
she gets used to that rhythm of seeing you and all of a sudden she's not seeing you.
Yeah.
Because the court can't get you in any faster. The court can't deal with it as a matter of priority.
No.
Even though the premise of all children's applications is that the decision will be made in the best interest of the child.
Of the child. Yeah.
Did you notice each time contact would restart the impact on your daughter? Was she a bit more distant? Did she struggle with the first few sessions or?
No. So Isabella, I think every time that I've seen Isabella, obviously in a contact centre, you're sat in the room and the supervisor brings Isabella to you. More often than not, Isabella's coming through the door before the supervisor's even come to the door, you know. So it was always, she would always run in and she would always give me a hug and say, oh, you know, I've missed you or I like seeing you and things like that. And then she'd always, I always, with Isabella, always had something ready for her when she came into the room, whether it be a little game or if I bought her something, we do like a little treasure hunt where I've hidden this something in the room and she would go around looking for it and it'd be hot, cold and things like that. So I think if there was any, if it was hard for her then, I think it was a bit of an icebreaker that she would come in and she knew that we'd have a game to play.
Yeah.
You know, so it was, I would always kind of distract her mind then, you know, she's never asked me, why haven't I seen you for so long?
I suppose she was so young.
But it was always, it just felt as if we just picked up, where we left off, basically. Yeah.
Each time you went back into court, was there ever a time where you felt that the court was very, or that they recognised the damage this was having on both you and your daughter? This constant break, and then we have a few more, and then we break again. And was that ever acknowledged by the family?
I can't ever remember it being acknowledged. I mean, I think I was in court last year, and I think there was a wishes and feelings hearing that Kafkas was to speak with Isabella and to see what her wishes and feelings were.
Yeah.
And she turned around and said to them, well, I want to see my daddy. You know, I want to go to the contact centre, you know. So I think that was the only time where the kind of court kind of said, we need to understand what's going on with Isabella. You know, previous to that, you know, Isabella was 3, 4, 5, you know. I don't think the court acknowledged what they were doing there.
You know. So they weren't really investigating the reasons for the breach?
No. You know, and a breach can be anything. It can be anything. Isabella's got a cold. Okay. Isabella stubbed her toe. My car's broken down. You know, it can be, a breach can be anything. But as long as they've got that reasonable kind of
excuse
then.
The court don't challenge it.
The courts won't challenge it.
Did the courts ever suggest that, well, okay, child's not well, why wasn't makeup contact suggested? Because actually, sometimes when I listen to your story, I'm thinking, this isn't really a legal issue. This is more of a co-parenting issue. Did the courts ever pick up on that and go, come on, guys, why didn't you just sort out an alternative date? Mm-hmm. Did they challenge that?
I would ask. And the response that I would always get from the other solicitor was, well, there's nothing in the order to say or to state that if contact is missed, that another session should be arranged.
And the court didn't identify that.
Nope.
So that resistance from the other side to deviate outside of the order, because you can do that if both parents are in agreement and it's safe to do so.
Yeah.
The court never suggested that.
No. It was never. It was always me pushing the other solicitor, kind of saying, well, I've missed this session.
Which is fair. Sometimes, you know, kids are sick or cars break down.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, you know, life, isn't
it's
it?
It's life. Yeah. Everybody gets something.
But let's just,
just
make
put
it up.
Can we make it to next week? No. And that was the answer. No, it's not in the order.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you know how many hearings you've had in the last 4 or 5 years? If you had to take a stab at a guess.
I would say I averaged about 5 or 6 a year.
So at least 20, 25 hearings.
At least.
Just on that point, before we go on, what do you think is missing from the court system whereby here we have a man, father, trying to see his daughter, we're 25 hearings in and the judge isn't saying, what the hell's going on?
I think it's, I mean, thankfully now, I think the judge that I have now, he has been overseeing this case for the last 2 years. So I think the persistency of the same judge, you know, is one thing. Because like I said, one judge making one order and then go again and then it's somebody else, you know. So I think having that consistency in them knowing the case, they made the orders. So I think going down the line, they know what they've said and done by reading their own orders, you know. So I think having a consistency with the judge on each case, I'm not saying it's easy for them, you know. There's most probably millions of cases floating around in the system that they've got to try and get through.
Yeah.
But just having that consistency of knowing, I remember Mr. Lewis's case, I remember where we are up to.
Yeah.
You know?
Helps.
It helps. But it's, and I'm not, they're a court, you know, there's no emotion to them. It's not their, it's not their life then, you know, it, you know, they're.
It's a process.
It's a process.
But it's a exactly. process that is failing. This particular yeah. case, this particular child, it's a process that you could say is failing the child.
Yeah.
And for the repeated breaches, which means that you're not getting to see her and she's not getting to see you, is there any support? Because you mentioned Kafkas earlier. Is there any support from people like Kafkas? Are they reintroduced back to do another Section 7?
It depends on the judge. So whether he look at it and kind of say something is really amiss here, we need Kafkas to come back and we need another Section 7, or whether he will kind of listen to both parents, you know, because there's always three sides to a story.
Yeah.
His version, her version, and what the actual truth is in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, you know, if they kind of do that and they kind of make a decision on their own, you know, and I'm not saying decisions right, but if we don't try it, we don't know.
Yeah,
you know, and that's my attitude. You know, if we don't give it a go, how will we know that it's going to work?
Yeah. Do you think that the enforcement process is strong enough, or do you think too many chances are given?
No, there's way too many chances given. There's been times, you know, I've made enforcement applications and we've gone, I've given my reason, and then they'll ask for an explanation from the other side. And then, again, as long as you have got a reasonable excuse on why it was breached. Oh, there we are, Mr. Lewis. You know, she can't do nothing about that. Well, can I see my daughter, you know, next week? No. And I'm like, why am I in this process then? Why are we here?
Yeah.
You know, why are you getting me to make these enforcement applications if you're not going to actually enforce what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, there's been so many times that I've gone back to court and the judge has looked at me and gone, Mr. Lewis, back again?
Really?
You know, and I'm like, oh, sorry to waste your time, like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's like, I think there's a very impersonal touch to courts. It's as if they don't want you there. It's very much, Mr. Lewis, I got to be down the golf course at 3 o'clock. What do you want? Mm. You know, it's...
So we're just sticking a Band-Aid on it?
Yeah.
Just so, back to the contact centre.
Yeah, we'll send him away.
Another Section 7 report.
Yeah, and then it got to a point where the court must have looked at me and thought, it's either, you know, this is actually getting breached so many times, or Mr. Lewis is causing trouble.
Mm.
You know, so then you get a 9114 slapped on to you, so you can't make any more applications for enforcement. And I'm like, oh, sod you then.
So for those that are listening that don't know what a 9114 is, explain what that is.
So a 9114 is an actual barring order on your order, basically, that you can't make any more applications for enforcement, or if you do want to make an application, you have to make an application for the application.
You've got to seek permission.
You've got to go and ask, can I make this order? And then the judge will say, well, why do you want to make it?
Yeah.
And then you'll kind of give him your reasons, you know, the order's been breached. Well, how has it been breached? And, you know, and then he'll either say, he'll look at what he's got in front of him, whether it's strong enough to go to an enforcement or a hearing or not.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all time and money and, you know, because these things ain't cheap.
No.
These enforcement orders are not cheap. You know, by the time you've kind of paid for your solicitor, the court fees, the barrister. You know.
And it's thousands.
It is thousands.
It's thousands.
Thousands, you know.
Can you remember how many applications you'd made, including the original application 5 years ago, before you got your barring order? Just roughly off the top of your head. Again, just for other fathers out there.
I don't think it was that many. I think I had, I'd say under 10.
One contact application and the rest were enforcement applications?
Yeah.
Or was there more than one contact application?
No, there was only that one.
Just the original one.
It was only the C100 and then the rest were enforcement.
Or C79
applications.
Yeah.
But yeah, the courts don't like him. They really don't like them.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the courts don't like them?
Because I think they get to a point where they kind of, they look at it and they say, oh, Mr. Lewis, you're back again. What's wrong this time? You know, why? What can I do for you this time? You know, what's gone wrong? And, you know, now and again, I will speak to the judge, you know, if I'm asked to, or if I'm representing myself. And part of you wants to go, will you just sort this out? You know, I said, you know, you kind of want to tell them, I'm trying my hardest here. You know, I'm trying to do what you were telling me. And they're like, oh, well, you know.
I think it's almost like a call to action.
Yeah.
You know, you have put in your enforcement application. You are specifically asking the court to roll up their sleeves and help you sort out this mess. It's a relationship that's completely broken down. You are no longer having a relationship with your daughter. And I think possibly the courts struggle with that.
Yeah.
Because whilst they have a power to order contact, they can't force a parent to make the child available.
No.
Which is really difficult.
Yeah.
And there'll be people listening to this, particularly fathers, in exactly the same boat as you. And I've spoken to so many over the years who will then think, what's the point?
Yeah.
Could you answer that? What is the point? Why did you keep doing it until you could no longer do it?
I will never, ever forget somebody telling me, because I have got to that point so many times where you think, I am done. I am emotionally drained. I am financially drained. You know, and you kind of get to a point in your head that you kind of think, I can't do this no more. You know, you it's as if you're fighting, and you're no further forward than I was 5 years ago. Mm. And it's, I had somebody tell me one day, you'll never give up. And you're determined, I've got to for my own sanity and kind of, and my friend said to me, no, you won't, because you're not selfish. You love your daughter. Mm. You will always want to be a part of her, you know. And he kind of said, if you do kind of walk away, you're basically saying you're selfish. You care about more about yourself than your daughter. And I mean, to hear that kind of, you know, I would absolutely give my own life for, and I suppose any parent would say the same.
Mm.
You know, you would give your life for your child, you know, and it's true.
So how do you cope with that? Emotionally, you're doing everything that's asked of you and you're still not getting a positive result. How do you deal with that?
So I think the first thing you've got to do is turn to your family or your support network.
Yeah.
You've got to try and unload what you were feeling onto somebody else, not to burden them with what you're going through,
mm-hmm.
but just to talk about it, just to get it off your chest. And, you know, you and I mean, I'm not the most emotionally available kind of person. You know, I get told I got a heart like a swinging brick. But I think I got to a point, you will explode with everything that you're trying to cope with in your head. Mm-hmm. You know, the want is the greatest thing, is you want to go and see your daughter, you know, and...
Because you miss her.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, people say, and there's no such thing of a live-in bereavement, but there is. Because when that child is taken away from you, it's you go through the same emotion when they are kind of not in your life as if they have died.
Yeah.
You go through that grieving process. You want to hear from them. You want to hold them. You want to kiss them, touch them, speak to them.
Smell them.
Yeah, everything. You know, that is all there.
Yeah.
You know, so when, you know, contact is stopped, yeah, I could do a week or two, you know, of not seeing her or not speaking to her. But then is where the grief kind of creeps in, where you miss them and you just want, even if they just sent you a voice note to say, "Hi, Daddy," you know, it's that, it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
But you go through that emotion, you know, they call it a living bereavement. And I felt it, and I felt it so many times, you know, and your mood and everything changes and people kind of recognise that in you and they kind of say, you know, "What's wrong? I'm all right, I'm fine, don't worry about it, leave me be," and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have got a support family or, you know, support network behind you, you know, unload onto them, you know. And as you know, I joined a group called Both Parents Matter.
Yeah.
And they are just dads going through exactly the same thing. I got a friend, Jason, we speak to each other every day, you know. And even back then, you know, when things were hard, Jason was always on the phone. Jason would always listen. Jason was going through exactly the same, you know, so we were each other's support network.
So he also felt that the court system had completely failed him.
Yeah,
I've had so many fathers over the years say that the court system almost makes them feel powerless, invisible, because you keep going back and asking for help and they can't, or they don't help you.
No, they don't.
Did you feel that? Did Jason experience that? Yeah.
If I had my time again, if I go back 5 years, I 100% wouldn't have put that C100 in.
Really?
I wouldn't have done it.
What would you have done instead? And why? First of all, why wouldn't you have done that?
I'm no better off now than I was 5 years ago. If anything, I'm worse off.
Okay.
Financially, for a start.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think... I think my biggest thing is that if I could have had a conversation and said, "Look, we need to kind of just, if we can sort this out.
Co-parent.
And kind of just see where we go with it. Mm. You know, let's work it from here." But it didn't work like that.
Because... obviously, we can't go into the nitty gritty, but would you agree? I mean, the court has failed you.
Yeah.
But would you agree that ultimately, not because they were legal issues, they were just co-parenting issues?
Yeah.
Do you think maybe that's why the court couldn't help, or would you disagree with that?
I think the courts could have done more.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I think they could have, kind of. Ordered a bit more.
Been a bit firmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of said, if this doesn't happen by this date, or, you know, if this hasn't happened by the time you come back,
there'll be consequences.
There'll be consequences.
Yeah.
But there's nothing. There's no actual punishment or, you know, reprisal or anything for doing wrong.
Mm.
You know? It's like, I've tried to do as much as I can as that they've asked me to. And, you know, I've done courses, I've done, you know, whatever they wanted me to do.
Yeah.
And, okay, I've done them. What am I going to do next? Or, you know, you kind of go back and, you know, when you've done these things that they've asked, you kind of go back, and not that you're proud of yourself, but you kind of feel good that I've done what they've, you know, it's like a school kid going to their teacher and saying, "Miss, you know, I've done my work."
Yeah.
And then to kind of, it disheartens you when they kind of say, "Oh, well, you're still not seeing your child."
Get a big F for fail.
Yeah. And then you kind of, "Oh, what am I going to do now then?" You know? And it's, and yes, they'll give you other things that they want you to do, or they want like 6 months of positive contact. You'll do the 6 months and you kind of go back with your reports and you say, "Oh, Judge, you know, everything's been brilliant." And then they'll kind of go, you know, to the other side, "Well, what do you think?" "Oh, no, well, we don't think so. We want this." And I'm thinking,
here we go again.
Here we go again. Why am I bothering? You know, that kind of thing, like, you know, and it's always something, you know, and you do kind of, you do feel invisible. It's very, how can I say, you want to do the best, but then being told, well, your best isn't good enough, you know?
Yeah.
You can throw everything at it and it's still never going to be good enough.
How do you think, over the years, going through this, being a father, not being able to see your child, this has impacted on your mental health? Because this is something that's really close to my heart, and a lot of times it's not recognised, particularly in men, that their mental health can really suffer. You personally, has it impacted your...
It impacted me in the biggest way I've ever... had anything impact me.
Yeah.
Mental health, you know, again, it's to go through this process, you have got to have your mental health in order. It will break you, or they will get to times. And, you know, I can understand, you know, when I hear that fathers, you know, unalive themselves, or how you want to put it, or they've committed suicide because of this. I can understand the reasons why. You know, I can understand, I can't understand what they're going through personally.
No.
But I've been to that point. I know what it feels like to kind of, when your mental health absolutely breaks down because of, all you want to do is see your child.
And be listened to.
And you got, you feel as if you're on your own. You feel as if, you know, you can't talk to anybody anymore. Or, you know, or you think the hurt kind of stops, you know, if I do this. And it's hard. It is, it's really hard. You know, you kind of get demons in your head and kind of, you know, you kind of, you convince yourself that your child would be better off if this happens. Because not only are you kind of taking on your own emotions, you were thinking, what does my child feel that, you know, that she's not seeing me?
Yeah.
You know, is she having a good time? You know, is she okay? You know, is she upset? And you kind of take that onto you as well.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard. And you kind of, you get into your own head and you go down rabbit warrens, you know, and the deeper, you know, oh, we'll have a look to see what's down this one, and you go down deeper, and then, and it gets to the point where you do get to that place. And I totally understand how fathers get there.
Yeah.
Because there is no emotional support then for them going through this process, you know?
And you've been very open about your mental health struggles. You got to that place.
Yeah,
you absolutely got to that place.
Yeah.
What brought you back from that? What do you think was your
time,
saving grace?
Time? So time is the greatest healer. You've kind of... I seen it as me hitting the reset button.
Okay.
You've got to get to that place to kind of think, when you're there, how do I get out? How do I get out of this hole? You know, how do I take this rope off my neck? You know?
Literally. In your case, yeah.
Literally. And so I sought the help of a psychologist.
Yeah.
And
but that was of your own doing. Nobody in the court system was offering you any kind of psychological support, despite you going back time and time and time again.
And I mean, there are services out there, you know, and especially in Wales, I know you've got Mind and things like that. And,
yeah.
You know, and I mean, if anybody is in that place, you know, you've always, crisis team are always on on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, and if you feel that you are in that position and you are, you know, kind of, because it's not something that comes on overnight. It's not something you kind of think, oh, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm just, you know, going to analyze myself.
Finish it, yeah.
You know, it's recognizing where your mind is going. It starts off small, you know. So I went completely off food. And obviously the pains that your stomach kind of, you know, you get stomach cramps and things like yeah. that. And I mean, not that I enjoyed the pain, but I felt something.
Right.
It's to feel something, you know. It's to kind of know, oh, I'm still alive today.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in pain.
Yeah.
But then you just let it go, you know. And it's, you kind of build up, and a couple of weeks go by and it'll be something else. I never self-harmed.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know a lot of people kind of, they self-harm just to kind of feel that release then.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, but I think where I got to the point was where I wasn't eating or drinking, my body was kind of saying, well, I'm shutting down then.
Yeah.
You know? So obviously I sought the help of a psychologist. And obviously needed to kind of, I think when you're in desperation, you grab whatever you can to kind of help yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously when, and I see her as a friend now. I mean, a lot
of psychologists.
Yeah. A lot of people, you know, they're scared of wanting to go to see somebody, or you think in your mind, oh, you know, there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
And, but when you actually get into it, you know, and you're kind of reassured and, you know, you're kind of, everything's going to be fine, you know, you get told, and yeah, you kind of, you question it. Don't tell me things are going to be fine, because they ain't. Mm. If things were fine, I'd see my daughter kind of thing, like, you know. But yeah, so seeing her was the biggest lift that I could have then. You know,
why was that? Did she give you tools perhaps to help you cope with the fact that this was real?
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing that you could do. Because I think that's what I hear from fathers is they just feel so powerless, mm-hmm. so frustrated. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm the father. I should be able to fix this. Mm-hmm. I need to be there to protect, in your case, your daughter. And nobody will let me do that. Mm-hmm. So did she give you maybe the tools to help just accept that position?
Yeah, I think, so they give you kind of techniques. So every session, I had one session a week, and it was, I'd always get something to work on for the next session. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much like homework and things like that.
Yeah.
But most of it was, you know, how to kind of divert your mind then. Mm. So distraction techniques were big ones for me. You know, I kind of threw myself into work.
Okay.
You know, distracting myself in doing something that I haven't got, you know, or I'm not in my own mind and I'm not thinking things. And but yeah, distraction techniques, you know, and again, learning how to switch off, learning how to kind of, and it sounds stupid, right? We're all adults and, you know, we all like to stay up. Oh, well, I'll watch this episode now and then go to bed. But it's like going to bed at 9 o'clock and having that extra hour's sleep. It makes the world of difference, you know? It's that, you know, putting yourself, bringing yourself back then to yourself, you know? Sleep.
Resetting almost after
again,
the day.
Yeah, it's putting yourself into a kind of, you know, state of mind when you go to sleep, you know, that you're not worried or you're not scared, you know, because I think being scared was the biggest one as well.
Really?
Yeah.
What were you scared of?
Anything and everything. It was, you know, if there was a noise outside, who's outside? You know, is somebody going to come through the door? Is, you know, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
You know, it was always that, you know, you could hear the dog barking. Why is always the dog barking? You know, and you go out and have a look.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy how your mind kind of tricks you then into your own self, you know.
Do you think there was a direct correlation between the barring order, which means you cannot make any more applications, and your decline in your mental health?
Yeah. Yeah. Because obviously all I wanted to do was see my daughter.
Yeah.
You know, and if I had to stay in the contact centre for the next 10 years, fine, so be it. That's what, I'll do it. But it was that, Mr. Lewis, we don't want to know anymore. Don't come back here unless you've got a legitimate reason.
But they hadn't fixed the problem.
They hadn't fixed the problem in the first place. So it was like...
They've just shut the front door.
Yeah, we don't want to know.
And there's nothing more that you can do.
Don't want to know.
So then your mental health takes just this massive nosedive.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, you do try and do things, you know, you try and work things out via solicitors, you know, and you kind of say, look, well, what's going on? What can I do? You know, is there anything, you know, that I can do that will fix this?
Yeah.
No, no, leave us be. We don't want to know. Got no contact now. That's probably the way we want it.
Probably, I know the answer to this question, but my next question was going to be, do you think there's enough understanding and empathy shown by the court system, by the people that are within the court system, social services, CAFCAS?
No.
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 Particularly not for fathers, would be even my experience having dealt with so many fathers over the years.
I think with, especially around family and child law, the laws are so dated in a modern world.
Mm.
There is no stigma anymore where fathers have to be strong and they're workers and, you know, that it's the dad that provides. And, you know, we're in 2025, not 1985.
Mm.
You know, it's people change, society changes, you know. The stigma of men don't cry.
Yeah.
You know, it's that macho. That we're not that place anymore.
Yeah.
Men have feelings. Men get upset.
Mm.
You know, it was, oh Christ, it's only recently I've learned to cry, but it's, we're not in that place no more where mum stays at home and, you know, watches the kids while dad goes out to work.
Yeah.
We're not there anymore. You know, I know a lot of parents, you know, and a lot of dads, they are house husbands. They stay home and see to the kids and do the washing and make the beds whilst the wife is out
working
and the wife is the breadwinner.
Yeah.
You know, we're not where, you know, we get these, you know, old school, you know, macho men. I'm the breadwinner. I earn this and da, 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 da. It's not like that anymore. You know, and that's why the law is so dated.
So dated.
You know, to where we are today. You know, it's, and I love it that, you know, all right, men stay at home and, you know, there's nothing, you know, you're not seen any different for it. You know, I'd love to be home playing the Xbox all day while the kids are in school kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
what you're saying is that the court system is so dated, they still don't recognise that fathers have feelings.
No.
That, you know, fathers, when they're being told that they can no longer see their children or they have a barring order in your case, that it's not going to have a huge impact on them, that recognition just isn't there.
No, it's not. It's not. But again, every time that I've gone to court, it's always, Mr. Lewis, I need to be down the golf course at 3 o'clock. You know, I got a gin and tonic waiting for me on the bar. What do you want?
Mm.
You know, and that's how it feels when you go into court.
Yeah.
What do you want? What do you want me to do?
Mm.
You know, you go, and the judge kind of, and I've been asked a few times, you know, by the judge, and I know it's a rhetorical question, but he'll say, what do you want me to do, Mr. Lewis? Let me see my daughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And even how did we get to that place where we have a father stood in front of a judge going, can you please let me see your daughter?
Yeah.
You know, as a lawyer, I kind of want to rephrase that and go, well, could you challenge the opposition as to why they're not allowing me to see my daughter, because it's not really the court that's preventing you. You know, it's I think the challenge is missing. If you could speak to the people that run the family court system, what would you say from a father's opinion? What would you say?
I don't think I'd want to say anything to them. But what I would say to them is, let me show you. Let my daughter come with me for 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you
how she's safe.
How good of a dad that I can be. Let me take my daughter horse riding for a couple of hours. You know, just let me have that time. Let me prove to you that I can, you know, that I'm a good dad. You know, I've said it all along. There's murderers that get time spent more longer with their kids than I do.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's true because...
But let's say you got the order and then it was breached, which is your history of the family court system. What do you think the court could do better with enforcement applications?
Actually give some sort, not punishment, but when they say with penal orders, you know, find them, you know, actually do it. Don't
place a fine.
There's always a threat, you know. If you don't do this, you know, it's always if you don't do it, you know. Well, no, I'm sorry. You're in the wrong here.
Yeah.
Here's 150 quid fine. You know, the next time is going to be more.
Mm.
And if you carry on doing it, you know, how do you fancy a night in a cell?
Yeah.
You know?
A consequence is what you're
consequence.
Saying. Yeah,
a consequence. You know?
But a real consequence. Not just a slap on the wrist and off you go again.
But it's, you know... It's, there's no punishment. You know, at one point I used to be scared to go to court and I'm bloody scared now. You know, I know there's nothing going to happen. He's not going to throw me in jail.
You've still got your barring order. There's still no contact happening. How does that sit with you now? Because you've been to hell and back through all of this.
I think I'm at a place now, what will be.
Okay.
You know, I mean, my barring order gets lifted next month and I've pretty much got a decision to make whether do I give it one last crack of the whip to see if anything's changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it hasn't. There's nothing in the system has changed. I'm still going to go back. I'm still going to say to the judge, can I please see my daughter? And then he'll say, yes, Mr. Lewis, we wanted to jump through this hoop, this hoop, this hoop. And the last one, we're going to light on fire. You know?
Yeah.
And it's about that big.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like an unachievable request then, you know? You know, yes, we'll let you do it as long as you do these. And then you kind of do them as much as you can.
Yeah.
And then you go back and say... Oh, you know, you don't even got it well done for jumping the last ones.
Yeah.
Oh, here's another five. Oh, and you think, oh, what's the point?
Here we go again.
What's the point?
You mentioned there the group that you're part of and that you have supported for a long time, Both Parents Matter. If you had a young man or an old man come to you now with a C100 application, what would you say to them?
Rip it up.
Really?
Tear it up now. You know?
Such is your disbelief in the family court system to be able to
rip
assist.
I mean, you know, nothing can prepare anybody for what they're to experience in a family court. And I mean, a lot of people, you know, and I've heard it so many times. I mean, especially on your life sometimes, you know, dads get this thing, I'm going to get 50-50. I want this. And you look at them and think, crack on, mate. You do your best.
Yeah.
You know? Because the courts want you to give them the solution. They want you to go in and kind of say, it can work if this happens. You know?
And they just want to rubber seal it.
Yeah. That's all they want to do is, yeah, all right, we'll go with that. You know, So going in there and saying, I want 50-50 and da-da-da-da-da, you've got to be clever about it. You can get 50-50. Just don't tell them it's 50-50.
Yeah.
You kind of blindside them then and say, right, I'll have a Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then, you know, the next week, mum can have the same and we'll work it like that. You know,
it's difficult even for me as a practicing family lawyer when fathers say, have an order, it's being breached, what do I do? And the words that come out of my mouth are, well, it's a C-79 application to enforce. But I know, having listened to your story and so many other stories, that I'm not sure it's going to work.
Nope.
I'm just not sure it's going to work.
Nope. And it doesn't, you know, because again, there will always be that reasonable excuse.
Do you think, because what you've demonstrated to me today and throughout all the years I've known you is this resilience. You just have an inner strength. And I get that you've been tested. You've been really tested. But can you look back to say that whilst the experience has been awful and pleasant, it hasn't supported you, the process has completely failed you, and more importantly, your daughter, do you feel that you have grown as having gone through that, that you're stronger?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think the biggest part for it, for me, the whole experience is being to kind of help others, is to help other dads through that process. You know, it's like, when you get a dad come and, you know, they're absolutely heartbroken, you know, and the first thing everybody says to you, oh, it'll be fine, you know, chill, you know, the courts will sort it, you know. I've heard that so many times.
Really?
And I'm thinking, you're off your fucking heads. But, you know, but just having to support that one person who his heart is getting ripped out, you know. And it gets to the point where you see them and you see how they were before and how they are now. Mm. And you try and help that person. Even if they do decide to go through the family court,
yeah,
you know, you still kind of support them and say, look, and you try and advise them as much as you can that when you're in front of the judge, you know, because a lot of people go into court, my ex is this and my ex is that. And you think, why are you screaming about your ex then? You know, have you got a vendetta? If you've got a vendetta against your ex going into court, you just grab your money and just throw it in the air.
Yeah.
You know, because the judge is going to look at you.
Court's not interested.
And no, they don't want to know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, but to kind of focus somebody on the actual reason why they are there, you know, is the biggest thing. Just to tell them you're there for your daughter and remember that you're there for your daughter.
Mm.
What's happened between you and your mother 20 years ago?
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, mm. You know. And you have got to stay so child focused, you know. And I think through my experience, I tried as much as I could to be child focused. You know, every thought and action that I did was for the best interest of Isabella.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can go into it, you know, with that set in mind, I'm sure you'll hopefully get an income that you deserve.
Yeah.
You know?
How do people reach out to Both Parents Matter? Do they have to be local? Can they do online? How do they get in touch? For fathers out there listening that are maybe have that C-100 in front of them.
I got some bad news for you.
What?
Both Parents Matter is closing down.
Oh, really? Do we have an alternative?
I think FNF.
FNF.
Fathers or Families Need Fathers.
Families Need Fathers.
FNF.
Okay.
Are kind of replacing Both Parents Matter.
Okay.
I've got a cool clue what they're like. I don't know.
I'm assuming it's going to close.
Yeah.
Do we know the reason why?
Funding.
Funding.
Funding, as of anything.
Yeah.
is funding.
Yeah.
You know, and we've tried doing some fundraising to kind of
keep it going.
Keep it going.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I think it's got 2,000 and odd service users, you know, and but it's not enough. You know, I know the lottery's been funding it and things like that.
Okay.
But yeah, funding for the main reason.
So families need fathers.
Yeah, I think they're
at least
the ones
that
are taking over. I mean, you get so many, you know, you Google dad support groups. There's a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
Dads for Justice, you know, and things like that. But
you're a big advocate for that. I know when you come on My Lives, you're always telling dads.
I'll always tell dads. And I think not so much, yes, don't get me wrong, they're a great help, you know. And they helped me. Not that I saved any money, but, you know, I did kind of save a little bit where, you know, they would write my position statements or, you know, or if you have got a solicitor, I mean, they get resident solicitors that would come on their teams and kind of chat and give advice and as you do on TikTok, signpost, this is what, you know. But yeah, and I think the biggest help that they gave me was the emotional support.
Yeah.
You know, it would... And it would be every week. It would be every Tuesday. There'd be an online Teams. And I mean, just to have that, you know that you're going to, you know, if you're struggling through the week, you know on Tuesday, oh, I'm going to go on, I'm going to have a rant. And, you know, and every because it's such a closed or close knit then kind of, you can go in and say what you want. Nobody cares any different what you've said.
Yeah.
You know, some people will offer advice and, but it was just that unloading of, you know.
To know that you're not the only one, to know that there are others who you're speaking to that are going through exactly the same thing can in itself help.
But I mean, we our dads come on sometimes and say two of them would have been in court that week.
Mm.
And it was just like listening to an echo.
Really?
It was like, you know, he'd say what happened in his. And the next dad, oh, yeah, that happened to me too, you know?
Mm.
And I'm thinking, where is this going, you know? I think every dad wants to be a part of their child's lives, and I'm sure their child would want to say the same.
Yeah.
I want my dad in my life.
Yeah.
But it's that, well, I'm sorry, you ain't.
So for you, Mark, what are the options? We're going to wait until she's an adult and then reach out to her again?
Because
the process has failed you.
Yeah, so I think Isabella's getting older now.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm grateful that I'm in a place now where, all right, I don't see her, but I speak to her every day.
Mm.
I speak to her every single day.
Because she has her own phone.
She has her own phone now. And obviously she's got WhatsApp. And
yeah.
So she voice notes me, she sends me videos, you know. So I think if that's the best I'm going to get, I can live with that, you know. At least I know she's there.
Yeah.
You know.
And you can hear her.
I know I can pick up the phone, send her a voice note. I can send her a photo. I can send her a video. She can do the same to me. So I know I'm not going to feel the living bereavement. Because I know I can pick up the phone and speak to her.
And speak to her.
You know? So I know that she's always there.
Mm.
And I think that's the biggest or hardest bit for dads is that when there is, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I feel for dads who get no contact orders. I really do. You know? So I think I'm grateful and lucky to where I am now is what is the best that I'm going to get. You know, and yeah, you kind of forecast and you dream, you know, that there's going to come a time, you know, because I mean, Isabella's got her own pony, you know, and I look after the damn thing every day. And I kind of look at the pony and I say to the pony sometimes, she'll come and ride you one day, you know, she'll ride with me one day. You know?
Thank you, Mart.